Hi there. Today I'm going to interview the lovely Carmel Olroghi about how she became a runner, because as it turns out, and this shocked me, when Carmel was in elementary school, she didn't run. When she was in middle school, she didn't run. When she was in high school, she did not run. She played a little bit of softball, but that's about it. She was actually good at it too, but pretty sure it's been described as pretty good. But so one day she decided to run.
Not at the running part of softball.
You weren't good at the running part? Yeah, so she was not a runner, no. So when is the first time in your life that you ran an entire mile in a row?
That would be, I believe, in 2014.
Not that long ago.
No, that's not that long ago.
You might have jogged a mile before, like gym class or something? Like even pitifully?
I honestly don't know if we did, and if we did, then it would have been like with breaks, like where I personally
walked.
Yeah, where like I personally didn't do the whole thing.
No soccer.
Like
no soccer. No running. Sports.
No, I mean I did soccer when I was like in first grade.
It's
a little different then. But yeah, if they did something like, I know that sometimes for a softball warm up we'd have to run. But I don't think it was
around the field.
Like around the field. And then, like, you know, I'd be in the back of the pack and, like, walking, you know, once I couldn't run anymore. So as far as, like, actually being able to run a mile in 2014 is when I finally decided, like, I'm going to do it. Like, oddly enough, like, running a marathon sometime in my life was kind of like a bucket list thing. But, like, I never really moved towards doing it. I would just be like, yeah, that's on my bucket list. But, like, I didn't actually, like, take action until 2014. And it wasn't even, like, I don't even know if it was so much towards the marathon thing that still felt really out of reach. But, like, I was like, well, I do want to start running. And so I thought, like, a mile was a good place to start. And I thought a mile was, like, pretty big. Like, I was like,
in a row.
Wow, like, I want to be able to run a mile in a row. And that's going to be, like, my goal. And
how long did that take to achieve from when you started trying to when you got to a mile?
I can't tell you for sure. I actually was like trying to find some of that data and it's gone. But like, I think it was about like 6 months or so. Like it was a process. Maybe it was more like a few months.
So like you didn't even have like a couch to 5K thing to.
No, I did have Map My Run, it's called, and I'm not sure if that's
that.
The first, because I was trying to look at that data and it was not all there.
Yeah.
I tried to pull it back up, but I think I had a different email for a while, so I think some of those really early ones are on a different, you know, a longer account. But I do remember that I would set it, you could set it like to tell you when you'd gone like a quarter mile or a half mile, and like a quarter mile was enough for me that I would set it to be like, you've got a quarter mile and your pace is, you know, like something like that. And I was really excited, so I would start by like, you know, the first time would run out a quarter mile and then walk back to the house, and then finally like run out a half mile and then walk back to the house until finally I could run out a mile and walk back to the house. And I was like really proud of that.
I guess I would have turned around at a half mile and tried to jog back because
I'm
lazy.
I don't know why I did it that way, but I remember I did it that way. So I did my old walk back.
Okay, so you got up to an entire mile and then it escalated?
Not right away. I think there was a little, like, once I achieved a mile, I think there was, like, a little bit of time where I didn't really run. And then I started to run a little bit more here and there, and do, like, a couple miles, and then, like, 3 miles. And then sometimes we peel back to 2 miles, and I did my first official 5K in 2017. It was the Swamp House. The Swamp House 5K, they had a half marathon too.
In Florida?
Yeah, in DeBary, Florida. I have a very bright orange, ugly shirt to show for it. And I remember being like really, really nervous about doing this 5K. Like I think I had run 3 miles before, but it had been hard. And then it had been a while since I'd done 3 miles at the time I showed up for the 5K. And then also it was just like things that like, you don't want to say this on the trail and ultra running page because they would tear me to pieces, but it was like scary for me to be like, So, like, I tried to recruit somebody to go with me, and I did.
Because to the 5K.
To the 5K, because I was, like, I didn't know how like, packet pickup worked, and I was like, what do you do with your keys? Like, just, like, things like that were, like, confusing to me. I don't know. It seems like such a, like, nonsensical
you've never done
question
it, you've never
now,
done it.
But it was like, well, I have to drive my car to get to the shuttle bus, and, like, what am I going to do with my keys when I get to the start line? Yeah, so it was, like, that kind of thing, because I didn't want them bouncing around in my shorts. But, like, that was, like, the level of clueless I was, and that was, like, how
I guess you don't know anyone that does the sport.
That was, like, how out of my element I felt, and that was only, that was not even 6 years ago, that took place, I guess. And I should also mention, too, that I always had this, like, really big, like, self-consciousness about, like, doing any kind of exercise in front of anybody. And that's part of the reason why, even though I had, like, a little bit of interest in running, like, I never even was comfortable enough.
Why wouldn't you exercise in front of people?
I think that just opens up, like, a whole can of worms.
Do you want to tell people or no?
Yeah. No, we could talk about it. We could discuss it. So, I wasn't always Carmel. I was known as Donut Woman, for a while there. Like, so I was always, an overweight child. I was obese, I would say, by the time I was in, like, second grade. Nutrition was not, like, a thing in my family. It was just, like, just total nutritional ignorance. We drank water never. We had unlimited access to, like, whatever we wanted, and basically, like pop or soda, whatever you call it, was, like, the only thing we drank in my house. And then we, like, my mom got in, like, a we're gonna get healthy kick, and so she bought Sunny Delight, and that was, like, our health drink. So, yeah, so I was always very, very large and made fun of horribly. Like, when I would get up and, like, walk to go sharpen my pencil or something, like, kids would shake their desks and be like, earthquake, and that kind of thing. So I'm sure that all plays, like, a role into, like, where I was really self-conscious. And, like, even softball was kind of, like, a hard thing to do because I didn't like the like, running part of it. But I actually could hit, like, I could put my weight into it, so, like, I could hit a home run and I could catch very well. So it's like I felt like a little bit better doing that, but it didn't feel like real exercise. But as far as going to like a gym or anything like that and doing like activity, especially any kind of bouncing activity in front of people, was kind of out of the question for me. And then even though I was in a normal weight range throughout my 20s, like, not considered overweight, not necessarily a weight I was comfortable with or would be comfortable with now, but not obese, you know, like, even though I was, it, like, the feeling of it stuck, you know, so it's like I still, in my 20s, could not, like, really fathom exercising in front of somebody else.
It just kind of sticks with you.
Right. Yeah, so it was a big deal to finally, like, go for a run outside. Like, that was the thing about running was, like, it's outside in public, like, people can see you doing it, and that was, like, a really big deal to me, and so that became, like, doing that 5K, especially, that was more than just running down the street, that's, like, running in a pack of people, but, I actually, like, enjoyed the 5K, like, the energy was, like, really cool, and it was, like, people came out to cheer, like, you know, yeah. And just, like, yeah, you can do it, and it was just, like, it's actually a really positive environment, like, yeah. So that was my first, like, any kind of, like, racing experience.
So it stuck with you and you did more.
At that point it wasn't so much about racing yet. It was just like, okay, that was a fun experience, but I'm not gonna, like, go pay to, like, do a few miles when I could do a few miles. Yeah, so even though it was cool, it wasn't like a thing that I didn't get into the 5K thing. That was the one and only, well, other than one I did with my kid, but much, much later. I just started running more after work. It was just kind of like I'd do a few miles, and it just became, like, after the 5K, I think the self-consciousness just started to kind of peel away more, and I was able to get just really deep in my head while running, and it just became, like, my therapy. It became my daily therapy, but it wasn't with a goal. It wasn't any kind of training. It was just, like, my, like, okay, go just run, turn on my music, and just like lose myself, just let it all go. It was just this de-stressing thing that kind of became this 30 to 60 minute thing after work kind of daily. But then like without any thought to it at all, the runs would get a little bit longer and a little bit longer until I was doing like 6 or 7 miles. Still not a ton, but then I was like, whoa, geez, I'm just doing like 6 or 7 miles now. Like, maybe, you know what? I'm gonna sign up for the Cleveland Half Marathon. Like, I just moved back to Cleveland, and it was just like, yeah, you know, why not? If I could do 7 miles, I could do a half marathon.
True.
Like, it just started to feel like that whole marathon bucket list thing wasn't that far out of reach, and that's where I started kind of thinking maybe I could do a half marathon this year and do like a marathon next year. And so that was 2018 that I did the Cleveland Half Marathon.
So you did do it.
I did do it. It was around like mile 8 that I started to have really intense, sharp knee pain. And
IT band pain?
It was IT band. And I ended up limping out the last few miles. But while I was like limping it out, I was like, man, sucks. Like, but I had fallen off of training a little bit. Leading up to the half marathon, I had upgraded to captain, and which required me to go away for
several
weeks.
It's
like work stuff, and it required a lot of studying and a lot of things. So, you know, long story short, I did fall off the training wagon for like a couple months, kind of leading up to the half marathon. So I kind of attributed it, like some of what was going on, to having fallen off of like running a little bit before that. But like I did, like while I'm limping it out, I'm like, yeah, you know what? I spend the next year training really hard, and I'm going to come back and I'm going to do the full marathon.
Your conclusion while you're at mile like 11 in horrific pain is I need to run 26.2 instead of 13.
Yes. Oh. Yeah.
Clarifying.
Yeah. And the thing too, it was like, I was so clueless, like showing up for that half marathon. Like I didn't like bring any water. Not that you necessarily need one for a half marathon, but even now I wouldn't want to do a half marathon without fuel and water. I didn't take any fuel with me. Like, I never fueled a run. Like, I didn't take any water with me.
You go, you run till you're done.
Yeah, because it was just, like, all I'd ever done was, like, 7 miles at most, but mostly like, 3 to 5 mile runs.
Well, so, they have those little tables with the water every mile.
They did. They had, like where you grab, like, a cup of water. Like, it was, like, those little, like, Dixie cups.
Yeah.
Like, you, like, do that and, you know, you're, like, throw it on the ground because that's what you do when you're road running. You just and yeah, so they did have that, but I didn't fuel at all during the whole thing, which like at that point in my fitness especially, that could have probably
helped
things a little bit, but it was mostly the knee pain that got me. Mostly the knee pain and limping it out. But yeah, I decided that I would do the full marathon.
So this was 2017.
Year. This was 2018.
2018. That's right. So in 2018, you ran a half marathon.
Yeah, 2017 was my first 5K. 2018 was the half marathon.
So that was in like summer of 2018.
Like spring or, yeah, I think
spring,
May.
Yeah, Cleveland is like May.
Yeah.
So then in summer you went back to training.
Yeah, so I went back to training. Now again, there was a big job change. I got kind of a, that's when I got hired at the next airline.
So for anyone who doesn't know, Carmel was an airline pilot for most of her life for... 17 years, 18 years almost.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Then,
well, no, for
commercial.
An airline pilot for like 8
she instructed
years,
before that.
But a pilot for like 18 years.
And worked for two different airlines. And the first one was one of the regionals that you've never heard of because they fly under other names. And then the second one was one of the major airlines.
Right.
So you upgrade to captain, which is a huge amount of studying. And then when you go to a bigger airline, they put you back down to first officer. It's all lots of fun and months of training, and they give you no time.
Yeah, so now I hadn't actually gone to training yet, but it was the interview process that was just
this
really,
is all like lots
was,
of time.
It was a lot, like a lot of studying, a lot of things, which is an excuse. Like, really, you could probably be doing all the things at once, but I was still working full time and studying a lot and, you know, kind of got off of things a little bit. But then I really picked up the training back up. I found a plan online, and I was like, you know what? Follow this training plan. It was the right timeline, you know. It would have had me ready to go, and I started following that plan. And when it upped the run to 7 miles this time, that knee pain, it was the same exact spot that happened in that half marathon, it came back. And actually, so I think this was like my second run that was like, you know, 6 or 7 miles long. And it came back early on in that run. And I remember just being like, no. Like at that point, it was like, it had to be enough miles. It couldn't be 0.1 short or 0.2 short. So, you know, I was at like 2 miles and I'm getting this pain. And I'm like, I have my 7 mile run today. You know, like I was like on that mindset.
I will do my run no matter what tweaks.
Yeah, like I was at that point in the training of like, yeah. And so like I ran around, I ran up a hill and down a hill, and it just like I had a few miles left of the run, and that pain got like so intense. Like
IT is horrible.
Like horrifically intense. And I like basically had to limp back home. I might have even called for a ride, I think. Like, I think.
Yeah,
it's
hard to walk.
I think I had to call for a ride. I think it was that bad, if I'm remembering correctly. And, with only a couple miles left, but it was just that terrible. And I thought, okay, well, this will go away. I just won't run for a couple days. And I wouldn't run for a couple days and go back. And it was that horrific pain. And I could even feel it, especially going up and down stairs. Like, walking, I could feel it some, but going up and down stairs, I could feel it bad. And then I took a month off, like, which was really, really hard. And I went to try to run, and less than a half mile, that pain was still there. Just the sharp, sharp, like you cannot push through this pain. Like I've had so many tweaks and so much pain and so many things come up since then, where it's like, it's all manageable. Nothing compared to this pain.
Yeah. And I've tweaked mine before.
I mean, the thing is about the IT band is basically when you get an angry IT band, and this is where I started doing research too, and started figuring out that this was probably an IT band issue. The thing about it is it rubs on your bone, and then basically it's inflamed, rubs on your bone, and the rubbing on the bone makes it more inflamed.
So it touches your bone if you move.
So it's really hard to fix it. Because anytime you move your leg, even walking and going upstairs, like you're grinding it on your bone. And so it's like very cyclical.
Mm-hmm.
But it sidelined me for 6 months.
So you fried your IT band and couldn't run.
Yes.
While trying to train for the marathon.
Yes.
So you didn't run the marathon.
No. So I could not. I absolutely
because you actually couldn't run
the marathon. Yeah, there was no hope. So I was really couldn't run at all. Sidelined when that marathon took place.
So did you do physical therapy or exercises for it? Or
yeah, so I went to 3 different physical therapists. I started doing a lot of research and basically discovered like strength training. And I think another thing worth noting too is one of the reasons that running was so therapeutic for me was because I felt I have scoliosis as well, and I had developed in my late 20s like horrifically bad lower back pain. Just awful. So it was like, I felt like I couldn't do things like lift weights. I felt like running was one of the only things that I could do. So I had all this back pain going on during this time in my life, but like running didn't particularly, it was like one thing I could still do. So this all started to get tied together, mm-hmm. you know, as I started to do
more
research and see the physical therapist, I started realizing that this probably, like, that IT band issue, like, yeah, my knee hurts, but this isn't a knee problem.
It's actually a back problem.
Oh, it's not, that's not where it's rooted. And so that was really kind of fascinating and interesting. And I started doing these strength exercises, and it's like my back started to improve for the first time and started to get a little better. I still couldn't run at first, but like I was really kind of blown away at how my back was starting to improve.
I think you showed up at a run I was at not too long after that.
Yeah, I think I started being sidelined in January or February of 2019, and you and I first ran together in September. So I was just getting
September?
Back. Yep. Yeah. September of 2019.
I thought it was earlier in
December. Late August of 2019.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause the first time I hung out with you was just a few days before, Arlo was born.
Oh, I remember that.
So yeah, I know that. But yeah, I was sidelined for 6 months completely without running. By the time I hung out with you, I could run about 2 miles again.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe just getting to the point that I could run 3 miles.
Because I remember we talked a bunch about strength stuff.
And then by the time I would do 2 or 3 miles, my knee started tweaking anything. Anytime I would even feel anything, I would stop right away.
But I remember we talked about a ton of strength stuff because you started building up your miles pretty quickly.
Yeah.
But here's what...
But I'd been doing strength exercises for months.
Yeah.
Now, you had a couple that I wasn't doing. You added some, but there was a big overlap in the ones I was doing.
That's what I thought. You'd already pretty much ironed out how to do strength. It just...
Yeah.
Well, there's only so much you can do for IT bands, so it's not like there's special magic things. The exercises are, if you figured out the exercises you have. But I remember I met you, so you hurt yourself in a half, but decided that you were going to run longer while you were hurt.
Yes.
Because when I met you, you already had it in your head that you were going to run 100 miles. I remember that, but you could only run like 4 or 5.
I couldn't even run 4 or 5. Like,
but you had it in your, I remember you being like, oh, I'm going to run 100 miler. You run them. You know how. I'm going to run one.
So
like, I remember you showing up to the run with the Jess was at when we were down at Edgewater and being like, well, I'm going to run 100. And I was like, really? Okay, cool.
Yes. Yeah, so, well, I was hurt and I couldn't run at all. I started hiking in the woods a lot. And especially I was on call for work out in Boston. And I would drive out to just outside of Boston. And there was, I don't even remember, like this reservation area with trails and stuff. And I would just... While I was on call, I would spend my on-call time, like, they weren't using me. They didn't need me at the time, so I would just go hike for the entire time I was, like, on call. So I'd be hiking, like, all day, every day, because hiking I could do without aggravating my knee at that point. And I started to realize how much I loved being in the woods. And then as I was doing continuing the strength exercise, I could pick it up little by little and just... I'm going to do a little
job.
We
overlapped Facebook friends. That was the thing.
Right.
You could see my face.
Yeah, we were overlapped Facebook friends. And so when I started to be able to run just a little bit again, that like I remember it was in those woods over outside of Boston that I was like, I'm going to try to run. I haven't tried to run in a couple months now, but I'm going to try. And I went a little bit. And it was like, oh, I could do a half mile. And then I go a little bit more. And every day, you know, I try a little bit more. And I tried to have more running. What's the word I'm looking for? You know,
jogging,
like intervals.
Jogging,
yeah. Like the try to increase the frequency and the pattern of little jogging spurts. And I thought, you know what? Like I'm going to be able to run again. Because for a while, I thought I couldn't. I thought I wouldn't never be able to run again. Like when you go that many months without being able to run without that kind of pain, I thought like it's done
psychologically
for me.
Destroying.
Yeah. Oh yeah. It was. It really, really drove me into the ground.
Like a lot of people aren't page one.
Like I
that.
Fell
or
apart.
Going through.
Like I hit rock bottom when I couldn't run. But that was the point where I was like, I'm going to be able to run again. I'm going to keep. Like I felt like I had found the path to be able to do it. Like, I knew those strength exercises. I knew my newfound knowledge.
And then being out on the trails.
And I was getting to the point that I could lift again. So I'd started lifting, too, which was just phenomenal because it had been years since I could lift weights. And that's when I thought, like, and I want to do one of those 100-milers.
It's hard to picture that your body was so destroyed that you couldn't even lift weights at all because you lift so much now.
Yeah. No, I couldn't.
It's hard to picture that you're not running.
Sailor was... 3 years old, and I couldn't pick her
That's
up.
That's like 30 pounds.
Like I could not pick her up. Now I put her on my shoulder. I still pick her up. She's
Now she's 50 pounds.
Yeah, she's 7, but when she was 3, I could not pick her
she's
up
She's 7
for
years
a while.
Old. 50 pounds.
Like I got. To
I only know because she wanted to be weighed
I got to
every
the
day when
that,
she was here.
Like, that was kind of like a really down point for me was when I couldn't pick her up anymore, and I remember that. But yeah, like at the point in the woods, I was like, you know what? I'm going to be able to run again. And I'm going to run. I want to do one of those 100-milers. And that, now, well, fairness... The only reason I knew they existed was because you were a distant friend on my,
like all the social media.
Yeah, you were like an acquaintance on my Facebook. So it's like, I'd see some of your posts and be like, wow, that's so freaking cool. But you were a distant acquaintance. Like we didn't know each other very well.
But I think everyone should run. So if you message me about running, I'll message back.
So yeah, that's the point that, I decided to do that. And then finally
totally
I contacted you. In August, and was like, hey, I'm kind of wanting to do this, move back to Cleveland, have no friends, all this stuff's going on. And yeah, you were one of the only people who I reached out to who got
yeah,
back
like, come to
me.
All the runs. There's runs every day. Come to
yeah.
the runs.
Yeah, there were a lot of people I reached out to just trying to make friends in Cleveland, and they were just kind of like, oh, yeah, we'll keep you in mind. And then they never called me, and like, we actually was like, hey, we're running today. And I'm like, oh, or whatever.
Yeah.
Or come meet us. We're hanging out.
Because I was going to like 2 or 3 pub runs a week.
Yeah. Yeah, you got me.
I wasn't really...
You got me into run club, the Monday and Wednesday runs, and that was good.
And then going to Saturdays in the woods, and then...
Yeah.
Yeah. And tire toe on Wednesdays.
Yeah.
Tuesday. No, that was used to be Tire Tuesday at Edgewater.
Yeah.
I'm surprised your back put up with that. But it did.
Yeah.
So you had it in your head you wanted to run 100. So then 2019... So that was 2019. So we... Cause
yeah, that was 2019 where I was sidelined for most of the year and then started 100-miler training in September. Official 100-miler training.
When you decided you were. Yeah. Because I remember you ran a race. When did you run your first race? Like, down in Columbus.
Yeah, I wasn't at it. I think it was probably September.
I don't even know where I was.
September and, like, October and stuff, I started doing little trail races just to...
I remember you doing
because,
a 20K.
Well, one of the reasons...
I remember you went and did, like, the 20K at the... I don't remember what they call it. Rocks and Roots.
Yeah, yeah.
I did
Rocks and Roots. That was January, February of 2020.
That's right. You did a couple of the short...
But
the
I did like Bobcat and
half.
That kind of stuff. Yeah. Yeah. So I'd go to the little trail races.
And I remember because you did a 25K and then you did a 30K and then... You did, I think before your first 50K in the spring is when pandemic hit.
Right. Yeah.
You were training up to try to do 50K in the spring of 2020 in pandemic.
Yeah, I had this like neat little plan of like, I'll do 20K, 30K, 50K, 100K, or 50-mile or 100K. Like, and it was going to all basically increase throughout the year. And then my first 100 was going to be Blood Rock in December.
Mm-hmm. And everything.
And that was the plan. And then everything like fell apart because of, pandemic hit and everything canceled. So I never did a 50K. Official.
Yeah. 2020, we just camped and hung out. So when was your first 100 mile?
The first 100 miler then ended up being...
Your first ultra.
The first attempt ended up being August. Instead of waiting for Blood Rock...
That's right.
What happened was the Oregon...
So you skipped all of your build-up races and then moved your 100 up 4 months.
Right, because how it happened was...
Did I tell you that was dumb or did I just go, you'll be fine?
You said it was dumb. You said it was a bad idea. Huh. Yeah, you said it was a bad idea.
You don't listen because, when I tell you that at all, ever.
I remember the way
I don't even think I tell you stuff's a bad training, idea anymore because
like,
you won't listen.
I wasn't having to work because of pandemic, so it's like we were training really hard, and then when the Oregon Cascades, the same company that does it, had like a 50-miler I was supposed to do, and when they canceled the 50-miler...
They gave the option.
One of the options was to have credit towards the 100-miler.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, sure. Like, because the 100 miler was a different time. It was a different race. And so I was like, I could be ready by then. But that ended up canceling too. But at that point, I was trained. So it was like we were scrambling to find an August 100 miler at that point because
That's
I was
right.
all trained up.
And I was
feeling
still very,
ready.
I still wasn't
But
working.
Yeah, when I said I was going to, when I was like, oh, you know, they're offering to put credit towards a race in August. I feel like I could be ready in August instead of December. You thought it was a bad idea. You thought it was too quick.
It was too quick.
Well, except it wasn't.
Except
it
wasn't.
Because we found Shawnee Hills. Shawnee Hills 100.
Only because you're stubborn.
Which we, both of us actually DNF'd that one.
We went camping. We camped. We spent 5 days. It was great. We stand up paddleboarded that cave creek. That was amazing.
Yeah,
the trouble is that we mostly
trip.
We camped and drank beer,
and we did a lot of stand up paddleboarding.
I stand up paddleboarded like miles of it. Like we went through a mile of a cave.
Not only that,
we were wiped out and tired.
Horrific trench foot during that.
Also,
race.
That
like my feet were like falling apart. It was.
I had something injured.
Insane.
You and your feet
yeah,
were
you
destroyed.
Had an injury. But what
we just
I DNF'd
we
it
at,
the thing was I DNF'd at like what 72 or 76 miles.
And it was just
I
your
knew
feet.
it was like just my feet that it was what was slowing me down the most, and I had more energy, and it was oddly enough that DNF made me know I could do it because I didn't know if I could do it until that point. How do you know if you've never run that kind of distance or anything even near it? Like, how do you know you're ready? So I didn't know for sure I was ready. I just felt like I'd trained consistently, but I didn't know I was ready. I didn't know I could do it. And it was like, that was the turning point for me, that DNF was when I knew I could do it. I had more in me. So I immediately went and got on the wait list for both No Business
and the Bear. Because I was registered for the Bear.
Yeah.
And I had run No Business.
You were registered for both of them. Yeah.
Oh, why were. That wasn't bright. Those are like a couple weeks apart.
No, they're a few weeks apart.
Four weeks?
3 or 4. But yeah, I got off the wait list for both of them the same day. And the bear was only, I think, 3 weeks after the DNF.
Yeah.
But yeah, the race I DNF'd and the bear were no more than a month apart. They were definitely less than a month apart. And people were like, oh, that's too soon. You need to recover. And I went and I finished the bear. So the bear was my first 100-miler finish just a few weeks after my first 100-miler attempt. And all of that was about 12 to 13 months after I had officially set out on 100-miler training, and I could only run 3 miles at the beginning of that.
You're a very stubborn person.
Yeah. Yeah, so at the point I started 100-miler training, the longest I'd ever gone was a half marathon that I had to limp out, but I had been reduced back down to 3 miles.
And then a bunch of my friends thought I convinced you to run the bear, and I was like, no, I told her to don't do it. She doesn't listen.
Oh, yeah, you said that was a very bad idea.
That was a bad idea. My friend's like, why are you making her run? And I'm like, I'm not. I told her don't. She doesn't listen.
Yeah, no, you said that was way too soon.
I no longer ever tell you anything's a bad idea because there's no point. It'll just encourage you.
You said it was way too soon, and then it was.
You did it.
Probably not going to go well, and then I would be very upset.
It's amazing how far you can get on stubbornness and a little bit of strength. Okay, so then now you've finished 10 100-milers, the Cocodona 250, and you finished 100 miles twice on longer courses where you finished 100, but they don't count because it doesn't count if you...
Well,
So that's since 2019.
Yes.
The end of 2019.
Right. Well, 2020 was my first.
Oh, 2020. That's right.
Yeah, 2019 is when I started training. 2020 is when I did my first 100.
The bear.
Yes, and Blood Rock.
And Blood Rock that you finished.
Yes, I DNF'd No Business because at that point it was ridiculous to try to pull that off.
I'm really thinking it was 2 or 3 weeks. Because I remember me being like, it's going to hurt me.
First 100-miler attempt where I got into the 70s, I did a race a few weeks later, finished 100-miler, then tried another one a few weeks later, and I DNF'd. I started to get the IT band pain at that point, and that's when I was like, no, I'm done. So I dropped No Business in the around 55 miles, because then I was like, okay, I've overdone it. Like, I don't play with my IT band after what happened. Like, if I ever get...
It was 3 weeks.
IT band tweaks, I tap out of whatever I'm doing immediately. That's the one thing I won't...
Healing me.
...do anything with after that whole sideline experience, of course.
Okay, then we had someone inquire. If you... What's your favorite after 100-mile food?
Vegan macaroni and cheese.
Is there a best brand?
Daiya.
I knew that answer.
Okay. Also my favorite before race food, too. It's like a ritual.
Okay. Okay, so when you pictured running your first 100, and then now that you've run a few, what are the things that happen during hundreds that you're like, holy shit, that is not what I thought would happen?
So one of the things is that I was, especially at that time, a very, very clean eater.
You still are.
Very clean eater. Like, no processed foods. I mean, I was stricter than ever. And I would say, I don't understand why you guys eat these gels and crap.
And
like,
Coca-Cola.
Yeah, I was like, I don't put that shit in my body any other time. I'm not going to put it in my body during a race. And I'm like, I'm going to fuel the race on nuts and dates. And that's what, like, I fueled all my long runs on nuts and dates and that kind of stuff. And then during Shawnee Hills, that first 100-miler attempt, like, by the time I was at 20 miles, I was like, tossing my nuts and dates in the woods. Like, I don't want this crap. It's too dry. I don't want to chew. This is garbage. And then I'd get to my drop bag and it would be like more nuts and dates. And I'm like, fuck. So that sucked.
But then, so Blood Rock was your second one. So did you pack less than nuts and dates?
Oh yeah. It was my second 100-miler finish.
The bear, what did you do with the bear for calories?
So the bear, I had more variety of things. I can't remember all that I did. But I definitely, at that point, I think I had some gels. And, that might have been when I started the Lenny's and Larry's cookies for a while, which I'm sick of now. But the Lenny's and Larry's cookies have like 400 calories.
Yeah.
They're huge. So I think I took some of those to the bear. But then especially like you during training would tell me like, oh, if you ever get to the aid station and you can't make words or you're hitting the wall, like you ask for a Coke. And I'm like, I'm not going to drink Coke. Are you out of your mind? That.
She argued with me a lot.
Like, yeah, I'm like, I'm not going to drink Coke.
And be like, just listen to this. Memorize it.
At the bear, I actually had like a really, like I had a tough beginning up to 20 miles. And then around like 25 miles, I was just feeling good. And from like 25 miles until like 70 miles, I was just like, I've got this. Like, this is going well. I feel good. I've got this. And then around like 70 miles, I started to crash. And I remember getting to like around 80 miles and thinking, I'm not going to make the cutoff. I'm not going to make the cutoff. And it was ultramath. Like I was fine, but, but I was doing ultramath. And I remembered what like Lisa, cause I'd been hitting the wall and starting to walk a lot. And so I got to an aid station and like, I asked for a Coke and I remember the volunteer being like, we have a lot left. Do you just want the whole can? And I was like, yes. And I drank the whole can of Coke and I was like, whoosh, 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 whoosh. Like I was like suddenly like, super runner and like I got this total boost and like yeah like but I didn't have much to go, so that was one of the more surprising things to me.
The Coke is magical.
Well yeah, that's when I found out that just processed sugar in general was gonna play a role in my racing. That's something that if you would have told me before, I would have told you you were out of your mind. And now of course I have Carmel's Deplorable Vegan Race Kitchen episodes in which I make blend lemon Oreo cookies with coconut cream.
Two Oreo cookies, 140 calories. It's more than a gel.
It works.
They're great.
It works.
I can only eat them in Oreos. I'm not a good eater during ultras. I just drink my calories, but.
All right. So we had a couple questions from the audience at home and people want to know more stories about things that surprised you when you became an ultra runner. Like you picture how it's going to be, you picture how your race will go. And then things happen that are different or things change. Like if I go back and I find Carmel pre her first 100 and go, hey, Carmel, this thing's going to happen in a race and this is how you're going to react. This is what you're going to do. This is how you're going to be with this. Are there things that have happened that would surprise you to hear?
So I think other than the nutrition,
the Coca-Cola.
Yeah, well, nutrition in general, because I feel with crap, but yeah, like all the things, the processed sugar.
Cliff Double espresso gels, dumping Starbucks Vias in your mouth because you're falling asleep and washing them down with water. The Oreos.
Yeah. But yeah, I think the processed sugar is more surprising than dumping caffeine in my mouth.
Nut butters and Oreos.
But I think the other thing would be boundaries changing, which
boundaries?
You said that ultra running would break me, and like I definitely like was of the mindset that I would never poop in the woods. For example, I believed with my whole heart.
If you're watching this and thinking you won't poop in the woods,
I believed with my whole heart that it would never happen. That I would never partake in pooping these activities.
You even pooped in the desert.
Well. It was my very first, it was the Shawnee Hills attempt, my very first 100-miler attempt that I had found you at the, right before the fourth loop, and you weren't in good shape, and we were like, well.
Oh, I had decided I was having
you,
none of it.
You pretty much decided you dropped, but then we were like, let's just go till we get cut, you know.
Well, you were going to walk, so I agreed to walk. No, I wasn't like that. I was like, no, just drop. And you're like, no, I'm going to go till I get cut. And I was like.
Yeah, I didn't know
anything. Fine, I'll walk with you.
No, you should go till you get cut. But the problem was she knew that our car was at the start finish.
And that there wouldn't be transport.
Yeah. So
and
she
I did not care about
that.
This race at all.
But,
I don't know why. I just didn't. But it didn't feel like a race. It just didn't feel like a race. There were like 14
people. It didn't.
People
it,
in
was
it
was really
pandemic.
Weird.
It was like,
yeah, it was like 14 people.
I've been camping and now I don't feel like I'm even racing. And I'm just, I just couldn't get my head in it.
But once we were like a few miles from the start finish, and this was like, we were like, had been dating for less than a year or two. So this is like a new girlfriend that I'm all crushed out on. And I'm like,
yeah, cause that started at the very, very,
I'm
very
like, oh no. I have
as a
problem.
Shock to both of us.
And she's like, what?
When we say started hanging out, we do not mean started dating. We were actually super surprised to find ourselves dating. We were like, no, we're not dating.
Yeah, but it didn't take a whole long. It took a couple months.
Yeah, we adjusted.
Just a couple months.
But we were both pretty surprised.
So by this point, we'd been dating for several months. And it had been during pandemic. So we'd basically, we were quarantined, you know, together and all that. So our relationship advanced quickly. But nonetheless, newer-ish relationship. Still the honeymoon phase.
She still didn't pee in
front
of me.
Less than a year together. And, here I am in the woods, with her and, uh-oh, I got a problem. And she's like, what? And I'm like, do you have any toilet paper? And she's like, no, I don't have toilet paper, but I can get you leaves. And she's like, starts, this is my, new girlfriend, my crush, is, picking leaves off trees for me.
Because I know which things will give you a rash.
Digging me a hole. So that happened.
Off the trail, behind a tree, you kick a hole.
That was super exciting.
I made her cover it herself.
That was a new experience.
I'm covering it.
But yeah, I mean,
I didn't watch. Though.
And that only progresses.
I went 10 yards away and gave you privacy or 20.
But I mean, I think that's one of the beautiful things about ultra running is that it sounds so horrible to people who don't do it, but you just kind of go back to being an animal again. In the nice sense of the term.
A Coca-Dona.
You just get back in touch with nature and your natural self, and you lose some of that self-consciousness just overall about everything. And everybody does. Everybody around you is doing it too. Everybody around, it's who among us has not pooped in the woods? When you're in a group of ultra runners, it's you say that in a regular people crowd, it's but an ultra runner's nobody cares.
And if you're a camping person, you're like, yeah, of course I backpack, I camp. Yeah. But if lots of people don't.
Yeah.
But you already do, you're a level up already.
At Coca-Dona especially, there are no trees. There are sections where it's 15 miles of just openness.
Coca-Dona?
As long as the eye, as far as the eye can see. So you're out there with all these other people.
Everyone politely ignores it. We all know what you're
Everybody's in the same situation, we're all doing it. It turns out that we all pee and poop.
No, this was so great. I have to tell you guys.
Puke occasionally. All these things happen.
You can tell them because I'm interviewing you. You remember when you pooped on the side of the giant, massive anthill because you were trying to poop on the other side of the little rise so no one could see you?
Right, so there was
you didn't realize it was a giant fire anthill?
I didn't realize it was an anthill, and then I went to cover it up, and I kicked
there
and
was
kicked, and then I got attacked by fire ants.
Geez. They were all over the back.
But yeah, that was, and the other thing too was chafing, people, basically, you had to lube your parts. It's a 5-day race.
In a tiny pair of shorts at an aid station in front of everybody.
So, by day three, people had their hand down their pants. You just both have your hand down your pants and be, having a conversation.
That's true. Usually I wouldn't be just standing there talking to a man I've never met. We're having mutual masturbation.
This is, a totally normal thing. So, yeah, definitely the change of boundaries was surprising as well.
That is funny when you're talking to another runner and you're just kind of chatting briefly, but you don't even know each other and you're total strangers and you're both rubbing your delicates with lubrication.
Other than that, I think the only other thing that's
happened
stands out as being surprising to me is it's surprising to me how low you can get and how bad you can feel, and even pain, even physical pain, emotional pain, physical pain, all the things, the lows that you could hit and bounce back from during 100, that surprised me, I think.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people quit when they get to that low, and they don't...
Well, it's hard to believe you could come back from
it. Yeah, they don't realize you could come back from it, and you can. And I've had things hurt. I've started a race with something tweaky and hurting. And
then mile 40
I've had it, where 30 miles is, where I'm finally things have loosened up.
I started expecting to drop at mile 40, but mile 35, I slipped and fell, and whatever was off popped, and then it quit hurting, and then I finished the race.
Yeah, and I think sometimes that's still fascinating to me, no matter how many hundreds I do. I know it enough to, keep going when I'm
hurt. I've been deliriously hallucinatingly sleepy and then been fine 2 hours later.
Well, that too. But, particularly with things hurting or with hitting a wall, I know it enough now to know to keep going for sure. I'm not going to stop. But, it still fascinates me how it's I'm good again. I'm good again. You know, it's amazing that the body can do that. And I think a lot of people never hang in long enough to see that. and to know that that happens, so that is one of the things. I think that's been surprising to me.
If there's anything else really, I think of anything else surprising.
Yeah. I don't think so. I think a lot of the other things were kind of expected and part of the appeal, like the bears and such. Wildlife, of course, I'm a fan of. Yeah, there's not.
But you knew there'd be wildlife in the woods.
Yeah. Yeah, I think everything else I knew kind of going in, that there would be extreme conditions, extreme weather at times, just all those things have not been surprising to me. They've been part of what I love.
Have you gone to sleep anywhere strange?
We slept in a tunnel at Cocodona.
Oh, that's true. Have you found things that you eat in the first 48 hours after 100 surprising at any point? And also the sudden onset hunger and the insanity and
that's true. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I've eaten some pretty disgusting, appalling things. We got Chipotle 2 times in 1 day, and it was the same delivery driver both times. So, where it's like, yeah, it's like, don't judge me. I ran real far. Give me that. Like, so here's that.
So what about positive impact it's had on your life now that we've hit the terrible things we eat afterward? You just have to eat for 2 days after 100. There's nothing for it.
I think just in general and overall, and especially the way I came to it, like the story that this whole interview basically was, it just makes all things seem possible, you know, like all the things that you said you can't do or think you can't do, like for so many years, for the entirety of my career, for example, I was unhappy in my career. And it was like, oh, well, I can't leave because of this, and I can't leave because of that, and I can't never have a different job because of this. And it's like people make those same kind of excuses for 100-milers and put that in the realm of impossibility. And I think once you do something like that, something that seems impossible, once you do it and it becomes completely possible, I think that spills over into other aspects of life as well. And I think running hundreds is part of what gave me the courage to take the chance of like, okay, I'm going to change careers. I'm going to put the one thing I have left, like, on the line. Like, basically, I lost everything in a divorce except my, like, very modest 401k, which I just completely gambled on a career change. I don't think I would have had the guts to do that if it weren't for, like, running 100-milers and how that's changed me, like, fundamentally. And it just goes over into all areas of life. And then even just the people you deal with in life who are not very pleasant, I think you start to see them, like, as weak in some ways. Like, it's like that, you know, that just the asshole on the job or whatever. Like, I think you kind of know.
Is it less angry and confrontational with them so much as that person's suffering?
Yeah, exactly. Seeing like that person's suffering and that person can't do the things I do. Like, maybe they're better at the job than I am, this job, but like they can't go out and run 100 miles or, you know, like, which sounds arrogant, but I think on some level you do know, like, you do know you're stronger than some of your bullies, I think. At that point, you know, like, remember, they may be like in what areas of life you might be encountering them in. So yeah, and I hadn't run ultras yet, but I also think that just running and some of that is part of what gave me the power to leave a really unhappy marriage as well. And it's like, I think that's what this project is about. It goes deeper than getting people to getting women to the start line of 100-milers. It's the hope, basically, that once you do this, it's going to spill over into every other aspect of your life. And so it's like the way I describe it, we're not just trying to close the gender gap at 100-miler races. I feel like it will make an impact elsewhere and other gender gaps too. So that's my whole thing about it. So that's
not all sunshine and flowers, though. Like, there's got to be negative things sometimes. This is very time consuming.
That there is. I would say that's been more of a struggle with the career change and the work that has brought with it, the amount of studying and learning and things, especially. It's feeling like I don't have a whole lot of balance sometimes, where it's like I put in my work day Then I put in my run, and then it's like already nighttime, and it's like it doesn't feel like there's like when I'm training consistently, it doesn't feel like there are enough hours in the day for other things all the time. And I think my relationships, my friendships with people who don't run has definitely like they've suffered because people who run could come run like, hey, we're running Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Saturday, Sunday. Like, you know, like we get to see them in our friend circle.
Go on the long run tomorrow. Yeah, we'll spend 5 hours with
the people
friends.
Who do run, like those friendships are healthy. But the people who don't run,
it just takes a little more effort.
It's harder to fit them in. I don't know a nice way to put that, and I know they feel that way, and they feel that way with good reason. And I mean, that's something that I feel guilty about, and I don't necessarily know how to fix it.
I
do miss some of my friends.
Like, there's people that I won't see during. I used to know people I wouldn't see during football season because I'm not into going to the football.
That's
but if you
true.
Weren't into it, then you didn't see them any weekend, and they were like weekend friends. But it was like suddenly I could either tailgate all day Saturday and watch a game, and I wasn't going to do it because I didn't want to spend my whole Saturday getting drunk, even when I wasn't a runner. Like, I didn't want to do that.
That's true.
Like, any sport I've been deeply into, it takes up a bunch of your time, and then more of your friends are in your same sport, and you see this, it happens. I think it's kind of like a normal part of life, whether it's knitting or joining, getting more politically involved, or when the couples couple up and have kids, suddenly it's hard to be friends with the people who have kids when you don't have kids. Like, those things happen in life. I think that, like, yeah. It's a downside of ultra running, but at the same time, it's going to be something unless you have no life.
Right.
And then you have to be home. Then, well, usually the people who aren't doing anything have to be home for their show. They have to stay right. caught up on their shows. So, I mean, it's going to be something.
Yeah, it's going to be something. And then there's taper and recovery where we try to see our non-running friends and our family yes, occasionally. But, yeah, and it is also, though, that
well,
I have
some non-running time.
I'm a person of many interests, I would say, and just some of the more artistic things and such that I'd like to be doing. I don't really get to those other things of interest.
You are still adjusting to new job too.
But
I wonder
yeah,
if it'll be different in a year
it might,
or even six
it might
months.
Be. So we will see, but that's the, I think.
It's so crazy because I graduated from my last school program for career 21 years ago. I've been at my same job for almost 18 years. So, like, I haven't had any major changes, and there aren't going to be any, I don't think. You never know, but, I mean, I'm kind of in a settled situation.
I had
just
to
such
start
a huge
from
thing
zero.
For me, so I've got more time
so,
to go.
Rebuild my life.
Yeah, I've got no, like, I don't realize it, but then I see you, like, mentally prepare for your day. I don't really do the same mental preparation because my day, I've been doing the same thing so long. And not that I don't get myself focused before I start work, but it's not the same thing.
But yeah, I think it will be interesting to see, like, as I settle in.
Well, that's why we're trying to add in more
change
strength,
over time.
Because that's the other thing. Like, if we ever actually had a big gap between races,
mm-hmm.
like longer than a month and a half, then which we almost do. But now we have our taper starts like this week. Like, it might happen. But like that program I wrote, where you can do a week of strength because it takes up so much less time. Taking a week off running, even if we did it only 1 week out of the month, you know, you do a week of where you do almost all, no running and all strength,
yeah.
and then go back to your running week because it takes up less time, and then you can do it at home, so then you can have more time.
Yeah,
like that's definitely why we're trying to make a flexible training program, so that people can have a life. Because even when we're training a lot, we're not doing these 90-mile weeks.
Well, that's one of the things I like about race stacking too. Is like.
I don't have to train.
If you run 100 every month, you don't really have to do much training. So,
just do your strength exercises.
That's my plan for
speed.
Now.
Do like two speed work
for
sessions.
For balances, I'm just going to run one or 200s every month.
We'll
be fine.
No, I think we only have like one a month.
It's one every like 4 to 6 weeks, pretty much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Accurate. A couple people are interested. How do you get yourself out of bad head spaces when you're in a race and you get all negative? And I typed out a response, and I said she just gets angry that her brain dares to even be negative, and then just ignores it and keeps going. Stubbornness and sugar. She also eats. That was my experience of running with her. That I was going to say the handful of times, but it was actually for days, for negative headspaces. Coca donuts. It happened.
Yeah, well, happen. I mean, like, yeah, both of us.
Oh, yeah,
yeah.
Yeah. But I'll get stubborn and, like, recite things.
And then sometimes lie. Oh, I think I put my forehead on the road at one point and cried. And when I didn't actually cry, I whined a lot. And then you like get mad that your body dares betray you by feeling like crap.
I do. I get mad at my body. It just makes me angry.
And her brain.
And then I feel just, like I use it as fuel. But what I would say first that might seem like a little bit irrelevant, but I really don't think it is I think you have to have an agreement with yourself ahead of time before you even start racing about what are acceptable reasons to drop and what are not acceptable reasons to drop. And for me, like as long ago, I made the decision that I'm going to go in any race until I get pulled, until I miss
unless
the cutoff.
Unless there's a medical,
yeah,
real,
like
medical
a serious
problem.
Medical.
Although you can imagine you're having one when you're not, when you feel like crap.
Yeah, it would have
you're
to be
probably
like
not dying.
Broken bone level, but then you're getting pulled. So
yeah,
it's
yeah,
basically
got
to be a pulled thing, which could also get you pulled. But
if they catch
pretty much, I decide I'm going to go until I get pulled. And I think having that those kind of agreements with yourself is going to matter for the headspace that you could even get in. Like you have to kind of train your brain, because if you don't train your brain, your negative headspace is going to start to take you to places like, well, maybe I should stop at the next aid station. Maybe I should stop when I get here. Maybe this, maybe that. My brain doesn't go pretty much to, well, maybe I should just quit because I feel like crap. No, instead my brain goes to like, well, I know I have to finish this. I feel like crap. So this sucks. And that just makes me angry. And so sometimes I could use that. Like I could use anger as like a fuel to just be like, I'll finish this. But also I know if I'm getting into a bad headspace that it's very likely a blood sugar issue. So, you know, the first thing I'll do is put in a bunch of sugar.
Yeah, but what if you can't make
yourself
eat
some calories? You have to.
What happened at Blood Rock? I feel like you...
At Blood Rock...
You finished.
At Blood Rock, I didn't have calories.
Oh,
so
you made them all.
At Blood That's Rock, weird. What happened was I got stupid and I got focused on like basically I passed Lee on an out and back and she told me I was in fourth place. And I was like, huh, that means I have a chance at placing, which is silly. It's a small field. Like, and I have since realized how my, like I was new, you know, but like, yeah,
that's
definitely,
exciting though. It's exciting.
Yeah. I've definitely since realized that it's like, it's just such a silly thing. It's like placing is about who shows up that day. Like Lee says, but also it's ridiculous. Like some of these
I've
women
caught up though.
There's one woman in particular that I've encountered who's a coach, and she intentionally picks races with a field like where there's only like three or four women so that she could podium and advertise on her place like, second place again. And it's like, there were three women, or she'll try to do races with even less than that. Which has made me, it's kind of helped me see a blind spot in how I used to be like, oh, maybe I could podium this one. Like, who cares if the field's small? Like, I would rather have more of you come run and like have more of you there than podium, honestly. Like it's, but yeah, I was new and the idea was exciting. And so I sped up and I passed the third place woman. I probably left her way in the dust too. She was going super slow and just like, it didn't even look like she was having a good time, but I'm like, passed her, you know? And then I'm like, I can't slow down. What if she catches back up? And like, I like ran right through a creek, even though there was like a footbridge off to the side. Cause I'm like, yeah, I'm not even gonna take time for the footbridge. So I ended up with trench foot later. But the worst decision that I made was I finished I think it was like four loops or three loops or something like that. I get to the start finish so that I only have one loop left. And I skip my drop bag. I'm like, I only have 25 miles left or whatever it was. I'm like, that's fine. I don't need any more fuel. I got a couple gels in my pack and stuff. I'm like, that's just like a marathon.
I'm laughing because I've done this.
Like, people just go run marathons. It's fine. So I completely skip this drop bag. I don't change my socks, even though my feet have been wet for hours and hours because of running through the creek. I don't hit my drop bag. I don't do any of this. Like, I'm just like, nah, I'm good. I'm just going to go. So I only had a couple gels on me. And obviously, like, this is going to be hours. Like, if it was 25, I could be wrong about this, the distance and how long the loops were, but about 25 miles, like, that's still at the end of, like, 100, that takes you a while, you know? So I ran completely, completely out of calories. I had none on me at all. There were a couple of sizable aid station gaps. And I just started getting completely, completely clumsy, and I kept falling. Like, I kept tripping on everything. Like, just no balance. Like, it was awful. And it's dark. It got dark. And then there's this, like, ravine where there's, like, a waterfall. It's, like, the most technical part of the whole course, where you have to kind of climb down. Oh, yeah. There's, like, you're right next to a waterfall, and then you have to, like, kind of climb back up. And then when you're going along the sides, it's just, like, a bunch of rocks and stuff. And I kept falling. I kept thinking, like, you know, if I fall the wrong way here, I'm going to fall off this. So I just got down on my hands and knees and was just, like, crawling. I just literally started crawling.
Which answers the question, like, what do you do when it's miserable? She just crawls.
Yeah.
Can't run. Crawl.
I just crawled. I literally she doesn't. She's just, and I used to say,
like, you ask her, like, weren't you upset? Well, there wasn't anything else to do, so I had to. She just crawls.
Yeah, I used to. I used to say, like, well, if nothing else, I'll crawl, and I meant that very literally. Is it?
You meant, because I was at the aid station at the top of the ravine. I saw you up there, right?
You were at the that aid station, but, like, yeah, Deidre went backwards on the course.
Yeah, she was bored.
So I see this I see this headlamp coming towards me. And she's like, hello. And it was like Deidre. And she had candy and stuff on her.
Did she have Swedish fish or something?
She had, like,
gummy worms.
She had some stuff, and I ate it all. And then she was like, is there any left? And I'm like, no. And it was funny because she kept offering us the candy. Like, and I was like, before the race, like, she brought it, like, road trip snacks. I'm like, no, I don't want your candy. And then at that point in the race, I'm like, like, it was appalling.
Get that blood sugar up.
Yeah. So anyway, that was way off topic, way side tangent.
But no,
yeah,
that was relevant.
I think blood sugar is the most likely cause anytime.
Because that was a low point.
Anytime. Yeah. It was
crawling up the side of the ravine at 3 in the morning with no blood sugar and no calories to eat on your person and not sure where you are is
that's a low point.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you have to make that agreement ahead of time that you're going matter what.
You couldn't actually drop there. You, like, could have dropped at the aid
station.
You
need to know that ahead of time, like, before the race even starts, that you're not dropping because you get in a shitty mood.
I saw you at the aid station.
If you get in a shitty mood, your only choice is to manage it or to keep going.
Like, I remember the aid station asking if you're doing okay and stuff, and you were like, I'm fine, I'm going. Like, you were still recovering from the blood sugar. We had to put a bunch of calories in you and some Coke.
Yeah,
and
I sat there for a while just eating a lot.
Yeah, because you were clearly not okay, but, like, someone tried to interface with you, but were you going to be able to continue? You're like, yeah, of course.
Yeah, dropping wasn't an option. Like, especially because...
That's what I mean. Yeah. That was your lowest point. You staggered into the aid station, like, staggered. Because I was sitting there waiting, because Deidre had gone off to look for us. I'm sitting there, like, watching for them to come back. And,
yeah,
like, it was never even on the table. I remember that. Like, you were just like, well, I'm just going to eat more until I feel better, and then I'm going to keep going.
Right.
And if I don't feel better after I eat all the food, then I'm just going to keep going feeling like this. That's what I'm going to do.
It's like, oh. Yeah. Yeah. So it's like you have to know and then that you're going no matter what. And then that's more incentive to manage your shitty mood or to just sometimes embrace it. Like I said, embrace it as fuel. Embrace it as this get
well,
real
anyway,
angry.
The finish is that way. So you just keep going. Like you don't have to feel good to continue.
But another thing I do very, very occasionally, like when it comes to training runs, I'll listen to music only if I'm running on sidewalk. Like there's something about it where if I'm out in nature on a trail, I won't listen to music, but like road running I do. But for races, I will reserve music for just really, really down points, like only like an hour or so during the race. Like I won't ever listen to it for a whole race or even close, but I will save it for the when I like really, really need a boost. Like I don't use a pacer or anything. So it's like, I don't get that emotional boost of like, I'm picking up so-and-so here.
It's
like,
okay to do. We just need to.
Like, yeah, no, that's just not my thing. But like, I do have that.
I'll drop
like,
back
I know
dry
I've,
socks
I know I've
better.
Got like the music if I need it. And I'll occasionally use that as a boost, but I will put the disclaimer that like, if you put music on, and no headphones, like...
Not everyone will love you.
Don't
don't do that. If you are, I hope you're not doing it wearing one of our project shirts. Like, good guy.
Don't do it near Carmel.
I don't want to be, like, associated with that.
Mind you, I won't listen to music, but I sing.
I've been seeing that more lately, and it just drives me nuts.
I sing incredibly
off-key.
People
think that's okay to just have their music blasting while you're out in the trail, like, all
together. The rest of us don't necessarily want to hear
around
nature.
Listen to your music.
Wear your headphones.
What I would suggest is wearing one earbud. Like, that's the other thing that you should not do while you're racing, is do not have it in both ears. Like,
I've scared the crap out of more people because they don't follow this
rule.
I'll
put it in
you're
both.
You're behind and bombing the hill, mm-hmm. and you yell, and then when you come around, they're like, ah, and they almost fall
off.
Yeah,
like, people trying to pass you or whatever, like.
I'm passing anyway.
Like, yeah, you're going to pass anyway, but it's just
not real safe.
It's really irritating when people can't hear you because they have earbuds in. So please make sure, like, if you're going to do that, just have, like, one ear open so that you could hear other runners. It's, like, that's the courteous thing. So I always like to put that in there.
And the safe thing, city, anywhere. You really shouldn't be blocking out your surroundings when you're outside the house and the gym.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually not a really good plan.
I'll put in both earbuds if I'm out, like, running the track or whatever, like we did the other night.
But that was we were in a group on
the
track.
Yeah.
So. I wouldn't necessarily run all Brooklyn, though, with two earbuds in at night.
Yeah.
We live in the city.
Yeah.
So we both will run alone at night in the city. I prefer to be able to only have one in if I'm going to do that.
Yeah.
I'll sing loudly to myself in city runs, too. That deters potential assailants. And actually, people asking for quarters, you start singing. I like to sing, like, Hallelujah, really off-key, Leonard Cohen version, in the middle of the night. Fun. I tried Amazing Grace, but like I'm really bad. But it's fun for me. And sometimes I recite poems in the night. It's fun. Invictus, you know, things like that, ultra runner stuff. Well, I think that's about it, though.
Yeah.
We covered everything. If we didn't cover stuff, we can always do more stuff at a later date.
Yeah.
All right. That's it.